and welcome to Dune Reads Goosebumps. I am Dune, and this is part two of The Cuckoo Clock of Doom by R.L. Stein on Dune Reads Goosebumps. I'm doing this one maybe different than I've ever done before. I am in my bed with a long mic cord going from my computer to the preamp to the condenser mic. So it's stretched around like 30 feet. I'm laying in bed. I am drunk. I have been drinking Kettle One all night. And now I'm onto a tall can of Tecate. I'm trying not to move too much with the old bed. What is going on new? New personal life stuff. Everything's awesome for once ever. I have no complaints. My girlfriend was tattooing my dad today. How fucking cool is that? Or how white trash? No, it's cool. It's cool. She's really talented and he's really awesome. Anyway, and then podcast stuff. Comics Online's going well, if you haven't checked that out. I'm thinking about starting a new podcast with Superfan Giovanni. I just bought a Zoom nice H1 recorder, nice-ish, so I can bring a recorder with me at all times, and it'll be more of a updating on personal life kind of thing, where it'll be entertaining, and I'll record clips throughout the week and then talk them over with him, because his life's so weird. Like, on Saturday, Giovanni was walking through the woods, and there was hunters shooting, and he saw a deer. And on Saturday, I was getting weird at a strange 90s-style goth club, which still exists, apparently. So, all those things will be updated. What the fuck am I talking about? The Cuckoo Clock of Doom. I'm on chapter 11, which isn't even near halfway through the book, because I guess I got lazy last time, because it's hard to get back into this. And chapter 11. Don't go upstairs. I begged myself, don't go to your room. You don't have to do this. There must be a way to stop it, to control it. I forced myself to turn around. I walked back down the steps. I sat down on the third step. Tara answered the door, and soon the girls stood before me in the foyer. Okay, I thought, I'm controlling it. Already, things are happening different from before. Michael, where's your costume? Mona asked like a total cunt who maybe had a stroke. I really want to see what your costume looks like, she said, like a female version of Polly Shore. No, you don't, I said, shrinking a little. It's really ugly, and I don't want to scare you girls. Don't be a jerk, Michael, Cece said. Why would we be scared by a stupid frog costume? And anyway, I don't want to rehearse with it. I'm reading a book, yeah. Who got money, RL? Mona added. I don't want to see that costume for the third time. I don't want to see it. Motherfucker. So she's like, look, I want you to rehearse in it. I don't want to see that costume for the first time on stage. I'll need to be prepared for it. I need to practice with the costumes and you in it. Come on, Michael. Tara put it in. Maybe I'm too drunk for this. Show them the costume. I want to see it too. I flashed her a dirty look. I knew what she had in mind. No, I insisted. I can't do that. Why not? Mona demanded. I just can't. He's shy, Rosie exclaimed. He's embarrassed, Tara added. No, it's not that. It's just that it's like hot in the costume and it's sweaty, and I know you girls don't have balls, but when balls and sweat combine, they're like the worst kind of Captain Planet. Mona leaned close to me. I smelled something sweet, like strawberries. It must have been the shampoo she used. Come on, Michael, she said. For me? Fuck no, bitch! She stamped her foot. I won't rehearse our scenes unless you put on that costume. I sighed. I didn't see any way out of it. Michael, man up. You're describing rape right now. You need to say no. No, that's not what I'm doing. Don't. She's stamping her feet. So fucking what, Michael? Do not do that. You can't. Look, everyone who's listening, even though someone wants you to do something where they're like, hey, Dune, record Goosebumps. At Dune on Twitter, record Goosebumps. Facebook.com/DuneReadGoosebumps. You need to record Goosebumps. Dune at DuneReadsGoosebumps.com. Seriously, record some Goosebumps. You're like, look, assholes. No. that's what I do, and now no one likes me, and I haven't, you know, forwarded my career in any way, and I'm still broke and miserable. Mona wouldn't leave me alone until I put on that frog costume. I gave in. Okay. Hooray! Tara cried. I gave her another dirty look. All right, I thought. I may have to put on the costume, but that doesn't mean the girls have to see me in my underwear. I can still keep that from happening. I trudged up to my room, but this time I locked the door. Now try to embarrass me, Tara, I thought. You can't outsmart Michael Webster. My name's Webster like the fucking dictionary, cunt. No way. The door was locked. I felt sure I was safe. I took off my jeans and my shirt. I dragged that frog costume out of the closet. I tugged on the zipper. It was stuck, just like the last time, but this time, it's okay, I told myself. The door is locked. I have privacy. Then, the door flew open. I stood helplessly in my underwear. Mona, Rosie, and Cece stared at me. Then, they started to scream and laugh. Ha ha ha, ah! Tara, I yelled. The door was locked. No, it wasn't, Tara replied. The lock's broken, remember? No, I cried. Dad fixed it. He fixed it. I tried to remember when Dad had fixed the lock on my door. Ah, God damn it. It was right after the underwear nightmare on my birthday. Oh, God. So it hadn't happened yet. How was I supposed to keep all this straight? Oh no, I thought. I'm doomed. Time is all messed up, and I have no way of stopping it. I began to shake. This was too frightening. Where would it end? I had no idea. It was getting scarier by the minute. I could hardly eat dinner that night. I'd eaten it before, of course, and I hadn't liked it the first time. Peas, carrots, and mushrooms over brown rice. I picked at the rice and the carrots. I never eat peas. I slipped them into my napkin when Mom and Dad weren't looking. I watched Mom and Dad and Tara eat dinner as if nothing were wrong. They sat calmly around the table, saying the same things they'd said last time. Mom and Dad must notice that something is weird. They must. So why don't they say anything about it? I waited for Dad to finish telling us about his day at work again. Then I brought up the subject again. I tried to take it slowly. Mom? Dad? Does this dinner seem a little, familiar? I'll say, Dad replied. It reminds me of the lunch we ate at the vegetarian restaurant last month. Ugh! He is from Middle America and he does not like those vegetarians. Mom glared at him, then at me. What are you trying to tell us, Michael? She said frostily. Are you tired of eating healthy food, you fat shit? I am, Dad said. Me too, Tara chimed in. God, Tara's cunty. No, no way, I insisted. You don't understand. I don't mean that we've eaten food like this before. I mean we have eaten this very meal before. We're eating it twice. Dad frowned. No weird theories at the dinner table, please, Michael. They weren't getting it. I plowed ahead. It's not just this dinner, it's the whole goddamn day. Haven't you noticed? We're doing everything over. Time is going backwards. Shut up, Michael, Tara said. This is so boring. Can't we talk about something else? Tara, Mom scolded, don't say shut up. Say cayete, you're in the cultural enrichment program. She turned to me. Have you been reading those comic books again? I grew very frustrated. You're not listening to me, I cried. Tomorrow is going to be yesterday, and the day before that will be the day before. Everything is going backwards. Mom and Dad exchanged glances. They seemed to be sharing a secret. They do know something, I thought, with excitement. They know something, but they're afraid to tell me. Mom gazed at me very seriously. All right, Michael, we might as well tell you, she said. We're all caught up in a time warp, and there's nothing we can do about it. Oh my God, this is the plot of Rocky Horror. So I got up so I could save that audio track and drink more and whatnot. And I had two pillows set up so I could record, and Franklin was asleep on top of both of them where I was. Oh my God, he's such an angel. Chapter 12. Mom pushed back her chair. She walked backwards to the stove. She started dishing rice from her plate into the pot on the stove. "You know Ikerarum?" she asked Dad. "Huh?" "Iselp says," Dad replied. "Eat him," Tara said. She spit some rice onto her fork and dumped it back on her plate. She was eating backwards. Dad stood up and walked backwards to Mom. Then Tara skipped backwards around the kitchen table. They were all talking and moving backwards. We really were in a time warp. "Hey," I cried, "it's true." Why wasn't I talking backwards too? "Narum," Tara said. She cracked up at first. Then Dad started laughing. Then Mom. I'm going to do some quick science for you people and read backwards because it's hard for my pronunciation. The first thing the mom said was, "More rice, honey?" That was backwards when I said, "Yene isir arum," right? And then the dad says, "Yes, please." And I said, "Iselp isse," right? And then Tara, who's younger than him, mind you, and clearly much smarter, said, "Oot em." And she was saying "me too." She wasn't referring to an ood from Doctor Who. And then at the end, what gave it away was Tara said "moron." Yeah. I finally caught on. It was a joke. You're all horrible, I cried. That made them laugh even more. I was wondering when you'd figure it out, Tara sneered. They all sat down at the table again. Mom couldn't help grinning. We're sorry, Michael. We didn't mean to make fun of you. Yes, we did, Tara exclaimed. I stared at them in horror. This was the most terrible thing that had ever happened to me, and my parents thought it was a big joke. Then Dad said, Michael, did you ever hear of déjà vu? I shook my head. It's when something happens to you and you have the same feeling, or you have the feeling that it happened before, he explained. Everyone feels that way once in a while. It's nothing to be afraid of. Maybe you're nervous about something, Mom added. Like your birthday coming up? I'll bet you're a little nervous about turning 12, right? And planning your party and everything. Not really, I protested. I know that feeling, but this isn't the same thing. This is... Say, Mike, Dad interrupted. Wait till you see what I got you for your birthday. You're gonna flip. It's a big surprise. No, it fucking isn't, I thought unhappily. It's not a surprise at all. You've gotten me that birthday present twice already. How many times are you gonna give me that stupid bike? Mom, Michael's hiding peas in his napkin again, Terror added. Back to her cunty self, I smushed the peas in my napkin and threw it in her face. Beer, 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 tiddly beer, beer, beer. A long time ago, way back in history, when all there was to drink was nothing but cups of tea, along came a man and he filled us up with cheer. Lord bless Charlie Mops, the man who invented beer, 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 deadly beer, beer, beer. When I went to school the next morning, I wasn't sure what day it was. It was getting hard to keep track. My classes, my lunch, the stuff my friends said all seemed familiar, but nothing unusual happened. It could have been any day of the school year. I played basketball after school that day with the African American kids. While I was playing, a funny feeling crept over me. A bad feeling. I've already played this game, I realized, and it didn't end well. But I kept on playing, waiting to see what would happen. My team won. We collected our packs. When Kevin Flowers yelled, "Hey, where's my Blue Devil's cap?" Oh yeah, I remembered. This was that basketball game. How could I forget? Good old Tara, she's done it again. Nothing leaves until we find that cap. I shut my eyes and handed over my pack. I knew what was coming. Might as well get it over with. Getting pounded to a pulp by Kevin Flowers hurt a lot, but at least the pain didn't last long. The next morning when I woke up, it was all gone. The pain, the scabs, the bruises, the gaping anus, everything. What day is it today? I wondered. It must be a few days before Kevin beat me up. I hope I didn't have to live through that a third time. But what will happen today? As I walked to school, I searched for clues. I tried to remember what had happened a day or two before Kevin had beat me up. A math test? Maybe. I hoped not. But at least it would be easier this time around. I could even try to remember what the problems were and look up the answers before the test. It's called cheating, Michael. And cheaters never prosper. I saw a show on it. It was called Cheaters. And the host got stabbed. And that's not a fun way to prosper. I was a little late today. Did this mean something? I wondered. Would I get in trouble? My homeroom teacher, Miss Jacobson, had closed the classroom door. I opened it. The classroom was already full. Miss Jacobson didn't look up when I walked in. I must not be that late, I thought. Guess I won't get in trouble after all. I started for the back of the room, where I usually sit, as I passed through the rows of desks. I glanced at the other kids. Who's that asshole? I wondered, staring at the chubby blonde kid I'd never seen before. Then I noticed a pretty girl with cornrows and 3 earrings in 1 ear. I'd never seen her before either, and I would remember a dargy. I stared at all the faces in the classroom. None of the kids looked familiar. What the fuck is going on? I wondered, feeling panic choke in my throat. I didn't know any of these kids. Where's my class? Hey, people that listen to Goosebumps, I'm going to England in January, so that's something. I'm excited. That's all. I'm just saying I'm excited. What, I can't be excited about things? Fine, chapter 13. Miss Jacobson finally turned around. She stared at me. Hey, the blonde kid shouted. What's a third grader doing in here? Everybody laughed. I couldn't understand why. A third grader? Who was he talking about? I had a crotch full of pubes. I didn't see any third graders. You're in the wrong classroom, young man. Miss Jacobson said to me. She opened the door, showing me the way out. I think your room is downstairs on the second floor, she added. Thanks, I said. I didn't know what she was talking about, but I decided to go along with her. She shut the door behind her. I could hear the kids laughing behind the door. I hurried down the hall to the boys' bathroom. I needed to splash some cold water on my face. Maybe that would help. I turned on the cold tap water. Then I glanced in the mirror very quickly. The mirror seemed a little higher than usual, I thought. I washed my hands in the cold water and splashed it on my face. I apologize. I was very excited about that line for some reason. The sink seems higher, too, I noticed. Strange. And my testicles seem much more inside of me. Am I in the right school? I glanced in the mirror again and got the shock of my life. Was that me? I looked so young. I ran my hair through my short, brush-like brown hair, that dopey crew cut I had all through third grade. I don't believe it, I thought, shaking my head. I'm a third grader again. I've got my third grade hair, my third grade clothes, and my third grade dick. But my seventh grade brain, I think. Third grade. That means I've slipped back 4 years in one night. My body started to tremble. I grabbed onto the sink to steady myself. I was suddenly paralyzed with fear. Things were speeding up. Now I lost whole years in one night. How old will I be when I wake up tomorrow? I asked myself. I don't know. I guess we'll find out on page 68. Time was going backward, faster and faster, and I still hadn't found a way to stop it. I shut off the water and dried my face with a paper towel. I didn't know what to do. I was so frightened I couldn't think straight. I walked back to my third grade classroom. First, I glanced through the window of the classroom door. There she was. Mrs. Harris, my old third grade teacher. I'd known that helmet of silver hair. I'd know that some. Come on, Drunkle Stiltskin, you can do this. I'd know that helmet of silver hair anywhere. And I knew, as soon as I saw her, that I really had gone back in time 4 years, because old Miss Harris shouldn't have been at school this day. She retired 2 years earlier when I was in fifth grade. I opened the door and stepped into the classroom. Mrs. Harris didn't bat an eye. "Take a seat, Michael," she commanded. She never mentioned the fact that I was late. Mrs. Harris always liked me. I checked out the other kids in the class. I saw Henry, Josh, Cece, Connie, Alex, Geo, Fred, Franklin, Scarlett, Diarrhea Jones, Dr. Anus McGintley, and Mona. All third graders now. Mona wore her shiny brown hair in two braids. Cece wore hers in one of those stupid side ponytails. I agree, R.L. Stein, those are stupid. You know what else is stupid? Those fucking miniature backpacks that every girl wore for like 3 months in the 90s. What the fuck were you people thinking? You know what I'm talking about? It was like a backpack. It was like strapped on your back like you were a... It almost looked like, you know, Spider-Man's logo where it's like a spider in the chest and the legs coming out? It was like that on the back. And then, what were you guys putting in there? Like an apple? That's... Oh, fuck you guys. And by fuck you guys, I mean all women. That sounded sexist. I'm just saying, when I said fuck you guys, I mean women who wore those. Girls who wore the mini trip. Fuck, where am I going? I like women. I like the colored people that I was making fun of. I like everyone but the Jews. Josh didn't have pimples on his forehead, I noticed. Henry had a sticker on the back of his hand. Donatello, from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. My favorite was always Raffaello. It was my class, all right. I sat down at an empty desk in the back. My old desk, right next to Henry. Hank. I glanced at him. He was picking his nose. Gross! I'd forgotten that part about being a third grader. Michael, we're on page 33 in your spelling book, Mrs. Harris informed me. I reached inside the desk and found my spelling book and opened it to page 33. These are the words you'll need to know for tomorrow's spelling test, Miss Harris announced. She wrote the words on the blackboard, even though we could read them right there in the spelling book. Taste, sense, grandmother, cornholing, easy, vasectomy, and happiness. Man, Henry whispered to me, these words are tough. Look how many letters there are in grandmother. I didn't know what to say to him. On my last spelling test, when I was still in the seventh grade, I had to spell psychology. Oh, fucking italics always screwing me up. I had to spell psychology. See, that was the end of the sentence. Grandmother wasn't a big challenge for me anymore. I zoned out for most of the day. I'd always wished school were easier, but not this easy. It was so babyish and boring. Lunch and recess were even more shitty and stuff. Josh chewed up a banana and stuck his tongue out at me. Henry painted his face with chocolate pudding. Finally, the school day ended. I dragged my little third grade ass home. When I opened the front door, I heard a horrible screech. Bubba, just a kitten now. Oh, it's a kitten! Raced past me and out the door. Tara toddled after him. Don't tease the cat, I scolded her. You're dumb, she replied. I stared at Tara. She was 3 years old. I tried to remember. Had I liked her better when she was three? Give me a piggyback, she cried, tugging on my backpack. Get off me, I said. My pack dropped to the floor. I stooped to pick it up. She grabbed a hunk of my hair and yanked it.
Ow!
I screamed. She laughed and laughed. That hurt, I yelled and shoved her, just as Mom stepped into the foyer. She rushed to Tara's side. Michael, don't shove your sister. She's only a little girl. I stormed off to my room to think. No, I hadn't liked Tara better when she was three. She was as much of a brat as ever. She was born a brat, and she'd never grow out of it, I knew. She'd been a brat for the rest of her life, driving me crazy, even when we're old. Even if we ever get to be old, I thought with a shudder, we'll never grow up at this rate. What am I going to do? I worried. I slipped back in time 4 years. If I don't do something fast, I'll be a baby again. And then what? A cold shiver ran down my back. And then what? I asked myself. Will I disappear completely?
Heyo! I'm now recording this much later on a clearly different microphone. This is Giovanni Giorgio's microphone from the Get It On podcast and Pod Gods and Dune and Geo Watch stuff. My mic cord is broken, so I have like a $500 or $600 recording set up without a fucking working cord. I just played back the end of the last recording of this, so where you were just listening, and realized, holy shit, I was slurring. So, I apologize. That being said, I'm drinking just Kettle One and a little bit of sparkling water, so the slurring will continue. Yeah, I got a new Zoom H1 recorder, so I can hopefully record a bunch of Goosebumps on the go. Maybe I'll finally just pony up and buy the entire set, and that way I can record them wherever. But that being said, I'm going to keep this going. I have no idea what's happening because clearly by the last part of this, I was very, very drunk. Chapter 14. I woke up in a panic every morning. What day was it? What year was it? I had no idea. I climbed up out of bed, turned my swag on. I climbed out of bed. It seemed farther away from the floor than it used to, and padded across the hall to the bathroom. I stared in the mirror. How old was I? Younger than I'd been the day before. I knew that much. I went back to my room and changed to get dressed. I checked to see if I had any pubes. That was always a good indicator. Mom had left my clothes for the day, folded on the chair in my room. I examined the jeans I was supposed to wear. They had a picture of a cowboy on the back pocket. Oh no, those must be for little kids or black people, because black people for some reason like to wear jeans with pictures on the pockets. Oh yeah, I remember these jeans, the cowboy jeans. Second grade. That means I must be 7 years old now. I stepped into the pants, thinking, I can't believe I have to wear these stupid jeans again. Then, I unfolded the shirt Mom had picked out for me. My heart sank when I saw it. A cowboy shirt! With fringe and everything! This is so embarrassing, I thought. How could I ever let my mom do this to me? Deep down, I knew that I used to like these clothes. I probably picked them out myself, but I couldn't stand to admit that I'd ever been so fucking stupid. Downstairs, Tara was still in her pajamas, watching cartoons. She was now 2. When she saw me pass through the living room, she held out her arms to me. Kiss! Kiss! She called. She wants me to kiss her? That didn't seem like Tara. But maybe the 2-year-old Tara was still sweet and innocent. Maybe, at 2, Tara was actually likable. Kiss! Kiss! She begged. Give poor Tara a kiss, Mom called from the kitchen. You're her big brother, Michael. She looks up to you. I sighed. Okay. I leaned down to give Tara a kiss on the cheek. With one chubby index finger, she poked me right in the fucking eye. Ouch! I shrieked. Tara laughed. Same old terrible Tara, get it? Because terrible sounds like Terra at first, and then Terra's her name. So it's terrible Terra. Terrible Terra. Terrible Terra. I thought as I stumbled into the kitchen, one hand over my sore eye. She was born bad. This time at school, I knew which classroom to go to. There sat all my old friends, Mona and everybody, younger than ever. I'd forgotten how dopey everyone used to look when we were little. I sat through another dull day of learning stuff I already knew. Subtraction. How to read books with a really big print. Perfecting my capital L. At least it gave me lots of time to think. Every day I tried to figure out what to do, but I never came up with an answer. Then I remembered Dad telling us he'd been wanting the cuckoo clock for 15 years. 15 years? That's it! The clock must be at the antique store. I'll go find the clock, I decided. I couldn't wait for school to end that day. I figured if I could turn the cuckoo clock around, time would go forward again. I knew the dial that showed the year must be going backwards, too. All I had to do was reset the date on the clock to the right year, and I'd be 12 again. Oh, sorry, I'm allergic to excellent bootleg audiobook reading. Ugh, vodka. I missed being 12. 7 years old. 7-year-olds don't get away with much. Someone is always watching you. When the school day ended, I started down the block toward my house. I knew the crossing guard was watching me, making sure I'd get home safely. But at the second block, I dashed around the corner to the bus stop. I hoped the crossing guard hadn't seen me. I stood behind a tree, trying not to be seen. A few minutes later, a bus pulled over. The doors opened with a hiss. And I stepped aboard. The bus driver eyed me strangely. "Aren't you a little young to be riding the bus by yourself?" he asked me. "Mind your own goddamn business," I replied. He looked startled, so I added, "I'm meeting Daddy at his office. Mommy said it was okay." He nodded and let the door slide shut like a totally irresponsible adult. I started to put three quarters. Oh! Nah, I won't make Jewish jokes. I started to put 3 quarters in the coin slot, but the driver stopped me after 2. "Whoa there, buddy," he said, pressing the 3rd quarter into my palm. "Fare's only 50 cents. Keep this quarter for a phone call." "Oh, yeah, right. I'd forgotten. They raised the bus fare to 75 cents when I was 11, but now I was only 7. I put the quarter back in my pocket. The bus pulled away from the curb and chugged downtown. I remember hearing Dad say that Anthony's Antiques and Stuff was across the street from his office. I got off the bus at Dad's block. I hoped Dad wouldn't see me. I knew I'd be in big trouble if he did. I wasn't allowed to ride the bus by myself when I was 7. I hurried past Dad's building and crossed the street. On the corner stood a construction site, just a pile of bricks and rubble and shit. Further down the block, I saw a black sign with Anthony's Antiques and Stuff painted on in gold letters. My heart began to pound. "I'm almost there," I thought. "Soon everything will be all right. I'll just walk into the store and find the clock. Then, when no one's looking, I'll turn the cuckoo around and fix the year. I won't have to worry about waking up tomorrow morning as a 3-year-old or something. My life would go back to normal. Life will be so easy," I told myself. "When time is moving forward the way it's supposed to, even with Terra around." I gazed through the big plate glass window at the shop. There it stood, right in the window. The clock. My palms began to sweat. I felt so excited. I hurried to the shop door and turned the handle. It wouldn't move. I jiggled it harder. "Jiggle the handle!" That was a Guar reference. The door was locked. Then I noticed a sign tucked in the bottom corner of the door. It said, "Closed for vacation." Aw, snap. Chapter 15. It's the weasel. Don't tax my gig so hardcore, Caruster. I let out a howl of frustration. No, I cried. Tears sprang in my eyes. No, not after all of this. I banged my head against the door. I couldn't stand it. Closed for vacation. How could I have such terrible luck? How long was Anthony planning to be on vacation, I wondered. How long will the shop be closed? By the time it reopens, I could be a baby. Or jizz. I gritted my teeth and thought, there's no way I'm letting that happen. No fucking way. I've got to do something, anything. I pressed my nose against the shop window. The cuckoo clock was standing right there, 2 feet in front of me, and I couldn't get to it. The window stood between me and that clock. The window. Normally, I would never think of doing what I decided to do at that moment, but I was desperate. I had to reach that clock. It was really a matter of life and death. I strolled down the block to the construction site, trying to look casual, trying not to look like a kid who was planning to break the shop window. I stuffed my hands in my pockets, in the pockets of my cowboy jeans, and whistled. I was sort of grateful to be wearing this stupid cowboy outfit after all. It made me look innocent. Who would suspect a 7-year-old in a cowboy suit of trying to break into an antique shop? I kicked around a little dirt at the construction site. Kicked a few rocks. Nobody seemed to be working there. Slowly, I made my way over to a pile of bricks. I glanced around to see if anybody saw me. The coast was clear. I picked up a brick and hefted it in my hand. It felt very heavy. It wouldn't be easy for me in my little second-grade body to throw it far, but I didn't have to throw it far, just through the window. I tried stuffing the brick in my pants pocket. Or is he just happy to see us, listeners? But it was too big, so I carried it. Sorry, there's a car alarm going off. How rude. I'm trying to read Goosebumps here. So I carried it in both hands back to the shop. I tried to look as if it were perfectly normal for a boy to be carrying a brick down the street. A few adults quickly passed by. Nobody gave me a second glance. I stood in front of the shiny plate glass window, weighing the brick in my hand. I wondered if a burglar alarm would go off when I broke the window. Would I be arrested? Would it? Maybe it wouldn't matter. If I had made time to go to the present, I'd escape the police. Be brave, I told myself. Go for it. With both hands, I raised the brick over my head, and somebody grabbed me from behind. Okay, goddamn, got distracted by listening to the after disaster and looking at random imager pictures, like a random image generator. Whatever, you don't care. You just want the Goosebumps chapter 16. Bring the Goosebumps. Bring the motherfucking ruckus. Help, I shouted. I spun around. Dad? Michael, what are you doing here? Dad demanded. Are you by yourself? I let the brick fall to the sidewalk. He didn't seem to see it. I wanted to surprise you, I lied. I wanted to come visit you after school. He stared at me as if he didn't quite understand, so I added, for good measure, I missed you, Daddy. He smiled. You missed me? He was touched, I could tell. How did you get here, he asked. On the bus? I nodded. You know, you're not allowed to ride the bus by yourself, he said, but he didn't sound angry. I knew that line about missing him would soften him up. Meanwhile, I still had the same major problem, getting my hands on the cuckoo clock. Could Dad help me? Would he? I was willing to try anything. Dad, I said, that clock. Dad put his arm around me. Isn't it a beauty? I've been admiring it for years. Dad, I've got to get to the clock, I insisted. It's very, very important. Do you know when the store will open again? We've got to get the clock somehow. Dad misunderstood me. He patted me on the head and said, I know how you feel, Michael. I wish we could have the clock right now, but I can't afford it. Maybe someday. He pulled me away from the shop. Come on, let's go home. I wonder what's for supper tonight. I didn't say another word all the way home in the car. All I could think about was that fucking clock and what would happen next to me next and what would happen next to me next. That was smooth, Dune. Thanks, Dune. No problem, Dune. You want a hand job? No problem, Dune. Fap, fap, fap. How old will I be when I wake up tomorrow, I wondered. Or how young.
Chapter 17.
When I opened my eyes the next morning, everything had changed. The walls were painted baby blue. The bedspread and the curtains matched. The material was printed with bouncing kangaroos. On one wall hung a needlepoint picture of a cow. It wasn't my room, but it looked familiar. Then I felt a lump in the bed. I reached under the kangaroo covers and pulled out Harold, my old teddy bear. Aw, come here, Franklin. Be my teddy bear while I read.
Oh, my goodness. Such a cute man. Franklin on my lap.
I slowly understood. I was back in my old bedroom. How had I ended up there? It was Tara's room now. I jumped out of bed. I was wearing Smurf pajamas.
Smurf pajamas, Franklin, that's crazy. You want Smurf pajamas?
Franklin got an American Apparel hoodie today. I'm not kidding. That's the kind of life I lead. I buy nice hoodies for my dog. I swear I don't remember even liking the Smurfs that much. I ran to the bathroom to look in the mirror. How old was I now? I couldn't tell. I had to stand on the toilet seat to see my face. A bad sign. Yikes! I looked about 5 years old.
He's younger than you, Franklin. You want to stay here or you want to go down? Go back to bed? Okay, good night. Franklin also got a new collar. Has R2-D2 stuff on it. It's pretty cool.
I hopped off the toilet seat and hurried downstairs, much like Stewie from Family Guy.
Hello, Mikey,
Mom said, squeezing me and giving me a big kiss. Hi, Mommy, I said. I couldn't believe how babyish my voice sounded. Dad sat on the kitchen table drinking coffee. He put down his mug and held out his arms. Come give Daddy a good morning kiss, he said. I sighed and forced myself to run into his arms and kiss him on the cheek. I'd forgotten how many stupid things little kids have to put up with. Rude. I ran out of the kitchen on my little 5-year-old legs, through the living room, into the den, and back to the kitchen. Something was missing. Something was missing. No. Someone was missing. Tara. Sit still for a minute, sweetie, Mom said, scooping me up and plopping me onto the chair. Want some cereal? Where's Tara? I demanded. Who? Mom replied. Tara, I repeated. Mom glanced at Dad. Dad shrugged. You know, I persisted, my little sister. Mom smiled. Oh, Tara, she said, seeming to understand at last. She glanced at Dad and mouthed, invisible friend. Huh? Dad said out loud. He has an invisible friend? Mom frowned at him and gave me a bowl of cereal. What does your friend Tara look like, Mikey? I didn't answer her. I was too shocked to speak. They don't even know who I'm talking about, I realized. Tara doesn't exist. She hasn't been born yet. For a brief moment, I felt a thrill. No Tara. I could possibly go through this whole day without ever seeing, hearing, or smelling Tara the Terrible. Tara the Terrible. Terrible. Good stuff again. How totally awesome. But then the real meaning of this sank in. One Webster kid had disappeared. I was next. After I'd finished my cereal, which I assume were Mom took me downstairs and upstairs to get dressed. She put on my shirt and pants and socks and shoes. She didn't tie my shoes, though. Okay, Mikey, she said. Let's practice tying your shoes. Remember how we did it yesterday. She took my shoelaces in her fingers, and she tied them, chanting, the bunny hops around the tree and ducks under the bush, remember? She sat back to watch me try to tie my other shoe. I could tell by the look in her face she didn't expect me to get very far. I bent over and easily tied the shoe. I didn't have time to fool around with this bullshit. Mom stared at me in amazement. Come on, Mom. Let's blow this joint, I said, straightening up. Mikey! Mom cried. You did it! You tied your shoe for the first time! She grabbed me and hugged me. Wait till I tell Daddy. I followed her downstairs, rolling my eyes. So I tied my shoe. Big fucking deal. Honey, Mom called. Mikey tied his shoe all by himself. Hey! Dad cried happily. He held up one hand so I could slap him 5. That's my big boy. This time I saw him mouth to Mom. Took him long enough. I was too worried to be insulted. Mom walked me to kindergarten. She told my teacher that I'd learned to tie my shoe. Big excitement all around. I had to sit around that stupid kindergarten all morning. Finger painting, smoking meth, and singing the ABC song. I knew I'd had to get back to the antique store. It was all I could think about. I've got to change that cuckoo clock, I thought desperately. Who knows? Tomorrow I might not know how to walk. But how would I get there? It had been hard enough to get downtown as a second grader. As a kindergartner, it would be nearly impossible. And, besides, even if I could get on the bus without anybody asking questions, I didn't have any money with me. I glanced at the teacher's purse. Maybe I could steal a couple of quarters from her. She'd probably never know. But if she caught me, I'd be in really big trouble. And I had enough trouble now. I decided to sneak onto the bus somehow. I knew I could find a way. When the kindergarten torture was finally over for the day, I raced out of the building to catch the bus and bumped smack into my mom. "Hi, Mikey," she said. "Did you have a nice day?" I forgot that she picked me up from kindergarten every day. She took my hand in her iron grip. There was no escape. Now we're on to chapter 18. At least I'm here, I thought when I woke up the next morning. At least I'm still alive. But I'm 4 years old. Time is running out. Mom waltzed into my room singing, "Good morning to you. Good morning to you, good morning, dear Mikey, me love you, wrong time, you Reiki." The fuck? "Good morning to you, ready for nursery school?" Yuck, nursery school, things kept getting worse and worse. I couldn't take it anymore. Mom dropped me off at nursery school with a kiss and her usual, "Have a nice day, Mikey." I stalked to the nearest corner and sat. I watched the other kids play. I refused to do anything. No singing, no painting. No singing, no painting, no sandbox, no games for me. "Michael, what's the matter with you today?" the teacher, Miss Sarton, asked. "Don't you feel well?" "I feel all right, bitch," I told her. "Well then, why aren't you playing?" She studied me for a minute, then added, "I think you need to play." Without asking my permission or anything, she picked me up, carried me outside, and dumped me in the sandbox. "Mona will play with you," she said brightly. Mona was very cute when she was 4. Why didn't I remember that? Mona didn't say anything to me. She concentrated on the sand igloo she was building. At least, I think it was supposed to be an igloo. I don't like those Inuits at all. It was round, anyway. I started to say hi to her, but suddenly felt shy. Then I caught myself. Why should I be bashful with a fucking 4-year-old? Anyway, I reasoned, she hasn't seen me in my underwear yet. That won't happen for another 8 years. "Sup, Mona?" I said. I cringed when I heard the babyish nursery school voice that came out of my mouth, but everyone else seemed to be used to it. Mona turned up her nose. "Ew!" she sniffed. "A boy? I hate boys." "Well," I said in my squeaky little boy voice, "if that's the way you feel, forget I said anything." Mona stared up at me now, as if she didn't quite understand what I had said. "You're stupid," she said. I shrugged and began to draw swirls in the sand with my chubby little finger. Mona dug a moat around her sand igloo. Then she stood up. "Don't let anyone smash my sandcastle," she ordered. So it wasn't an igloo. I guess I was wrong. "All right," I agreed. She toddled away. A few minutes later, she returned, carrying a bucket. She carefully pulled a little water into her sandcastle moat. She dumped the rest
on my head. Oh, no! That's crazy.
Stupid boy, she squealed, running away. I rose and shook my wet head like a dog. I felt a strange urge to burst into tears and run to the teacher for help, but I fought it. Mona stood a few yards away from me, ready to run.
Nyeh, nyeh,
she taunted.
Come and get me, Mikey.
I pushed my wet hair out of my face and stared at Mona.
You can't catch me,
she called. What could I do? I had to chase after her. I began to run. Mona screamed and raced to a tree by the playground fence. Another girl stood there. Was that Cece? She wore thick glasses with pink rims, and underneath, a pink eye patch. I'd forgotten about that eye patch. She had to wear it until halfway through first grade. Mona screamed again and clutched Cece. Cece clutched her back and screamed too. I stopped in front of the tree. Don't worry, I won't hurt you, I assured them.
Yes, you will,
Mona squealed.
Help!
I sat down on the grass to prove I didn't want to hurt them.
He's hoarding us! He's hoarding us!
The girl shouted. They clutched their hands and jumped on top of me. Ow! Fuck! I cried.
Hold his arms! Hold his arms!
Mona ordered. Cece obeyed. Mona started tickling me under the arms. Stop it, I begged. It was torture. Stop it!
No, Mona cried. This is what you get for trying to catch us.
I didn't. I had trouble getting the words out while she tickled me. I didn't try to...
Yes, you did, Mona insisted.
I forgot to... I'd forgotten that Mona used to be such a cunt. It made me think twice. If I ever make it back to my real age, I thought, maybe I won't like Mona so much anymore. Please, stop, I begged.
I'll stop, Mona said, but only if you promise something.
What?
You have to climb that tree.
She pointed to the tree by the fence.
Okay.
I stared at the tree. Climbing it wouldn't be a big deal. All right, I agreed. Just please get off of me. I really don't appreciate that. Mona stood up. Cece let go of my arms. I climbed to my feet and brushed the grass off my pants.
You're scared,
Mona taunted. I'm not scared. I'm not scared. I'm not scared at all. I will climb a tree, no problem, I replied.
What a brat. She was almost as bad as Tara.
Now, Mona and Cece chanted,
Mikey is scared, Mikey is scared.
I ignored them. I grabbed the lowest branch of the tree and hauled myself up. It was harder than I thought it would be. My 4-year-old body wasn't very athletic.
Mikey is scared, Mikey is scared.
I'm so good at doing the kid voice. Shut up! I yelled down at them. Can't you see that I'm clearly climbing the stupid tree? It doesn't make sense to tease me about being scared. I'm climbing the fucking tree. You're yelling at me about being scared about climbing the tree. Clearly I am climbing the tree. You see me grabbing one branch after another. Look at my altitude. I'm like 3.5-4 feet off the ground. Look at you. Why are you possibly still saying I'm scared? Calm down. Calm down. Mona, can you hand me the Xanax from my bag right there? I feel like I'm having a panic attack. It's just... Okay. I can do this. They both gave me the blank look Mona had given me before, as if they didn't understand what I was saying.
Mikey is scared,
they chanted. I sighed and kept climbing. My hands were so small it was hard to grip the branches. One of my feet slipped. Then a terrible thought popped in my head. Wait a minute. I shouldn't be doing this. Isn't nursery school the year I broke my arm?
Yeah!
Chapter 19. Morning again. I yawned and opened my eyes. I shook my left arm. The other one I broke climbing that stupid tree the day before. The arm felt fine, perfectly normal, completely healed. Maybe I was turning into Wolverine. I must have gone back in time again, I thought. Or I must be Wolverine. Come on. Let's change the direction of this one. Come on, RL. Let's listen to Dune. That's the good part about this messed up time thing. I didn't have to wait for my arm to heal. I wondered how far back I went. The sun poured in through the window of Tara's, or my, room. It cast a weird shadow on my face, a striped shadow. I tried to roll out of bed. My body slammed against something. The fuck was that? I rolled back to look. Bars? I was surrounded by bars. Was I in jail? I tried to sit up so I could see better. It wasn't as easy as usual. My stomach muscles seemed to have grown weak. At last, I managed to sit up and look around. I wasn't in jail. I was in a crib. I crumpled up beside me was my old yellow blankie with the embroidered duck on it. I sat beside a small pile of stuffed animals. I was wearing a tiny white undershirt and... oh, no. I shut my eyes in horror. It can't be. Please don't let this be true, I prayed. I opened my eyes, checked to see if my prayer had come true. It hadn't. Like all prayers ever in all of goddamn human history, it hadn't come true. I was wearing diapers. Diapers? Oh! How young am I now? How far back in time did I go, I wondered.
Are you awake, Mikey?
Mom came into the room. She looked pretty young. I didn't remember ever seeing her this young before.
Did you get lots of sleep, sweetie pie?
Mom asked. She clearly expected no answer from me. Instead, she shoved a bottle of juice in my mouth. Yuck, a bottle! I pulled it out of my mouth and clumsily threw it down. Mom picked it up.
No, no, she said patiently.
Bad, a little Mikey. Drink your bottle now. Come on. She slid it back into my mouth.
Well, I was thirsty, so I drank the juice.
Drinking from a bottle wasn't that bad once you get used to it. Mom left the room. I let the bottle drop. I had to know how old I was. I had to find out how much time I had left. I grabbed the bars of the crib and pulled myself to my feet. All right, I thought, I can stand. I took a step. I couldn't control my leg muscles very well. I toddled around the crib. I can walk, I realized. Unsteadily, but at least I can walk. I must be about 1 year old. I fell just then and banged my head against the side of the crib. Tears welled up in my eyes. I started wailing, bawling. Mom ran into the room. What's the matter, Mikey? What happened now? She picked me up and started patting me on the back. I couldn't stop crying. It was really embarrassing. What am I going to do? I thought desperately. In one night, I went back in time 3 years. I am only 1 year old now. How old will I be tomorrow? A little shiver ran down my tiny spine. I've got to find a way to make time go forward again. Today, I told myself, but what can I do? I'm not even in nursery school anymore. I'm a baby.
I have the windows open, and I've realized recently that the neighbors can hear me because I can hear the neighbors either talking or fucking or whatever. And I just yelled out, I'm a baby. And I'm sure it's very, very confusing to them.
God, that was stupid. Mom said we were going out. She wanted to dress me. Then she uttered the dreaded words. I bet I know what's bothering you, little Mikey. You probably need your diaper change. No, I cried. No. Oh, yes, you do. Mikey, come on. I didn't like what happened after that. I'd rather block it out of my memory. I'm sure you understand. When the worst was over, Mom plopped me down in a playpen, more bars, while she bustled around the house. I took a rattle. I batted at a mobile hanger over my head. I watched it spin around. I pressed buttons on a plastic toy. Different noises came out when I pressed different buttons. A squeak, a honk, a moo. I was bored out of my fucking mind. Then, Mom picked me up again. She bundled me into a warm sweater and a dopey little knit cap. Baby blue. Want to see Daddy? She cooed at me. Want to see Daddy and go shopping?
Da-da,
I replied. I'd planned to say, if you don't take me to Auntie's Antiques, I'll throw myself out of the crib and crack my fucking head open. But I couldn't talk. It was so frustrating. Mom carried me out to the car. She strapped me into the baby seat in the back. I tried to say, not so tight, Mom. It came out,
no, 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 no.
Don't give me a hard time now, Mikey, Mom said sharply. I know you don't like your car seat, but it's the law. She gave the strap an extra tug. Then she drove into town. At least there's a chance, I thought. If we're going to meet Dad, we'll be near the antique store. Maybe, just maybe.
Mom parked the car outside of Dad's office building. She unstrapped me from the car seat. I could move again, but not for long. She pulled a stroller out of the trunk, unfolded it, and strapped me in. Being a baby really is like being a prisoner, I thought, as she wheeled me across the sidewalk. I never realized how awful it is. It was lunchtime. A stream of workers flowed out of the office building. Dad appeared and gave Mom a kiss. He squatted down to tickle me under the chin. "There's my little boy," he said. "Can you say hi to your daddy?" Wow, apparently Dune can't. "Can you say hi to your daddy?" Mom prompted me.
"Hi, Dada," I gurgled.
"Hey, Mikey," Dad said fondly. But when he stood up, he spoke quietly to Mom, as if I couldn't hear. "Shouldn't he be saying more words by now, honey? Ted Jackson's kid's Mikey's age, and he can say whole sentences. He can say light bulb and kitchen and I want my teddy bear and make it right this time, bitch." "Don't start that again," Mom whispered angrily. "Mikey is not slow." I squirmed in my stroller, fuming. "Slow? Who said I was slow?" "I didn't say he was slow, honey," Dad went on. "I only said..." "Yes, you did," Mom insisted. "Yes, you did, the other night, when he stuffed those peas up his nose. You said you thought we should have him tested." "I stuffed peas up my nose?" I shuddered. "Ugh, if I keep putting my things up my nose all the time, I'll end up like Dune." "Sure, stuffing peas up your nose is stupid, but I was only a baby. Wasn't Dad getting carried away?" I thought so. I wish I could tell him I would turn out all right, at least up to the age of 12. I mean, I'm no genius, but I get mostly A's and B's. "Can we discuss this later?" Dad said. "I've only got an hour for lunch. If we're going to find a dining room table, we'd better get moving." "You brought it up." Mom sniffed. She wheeled the stroller smartly around and began to cross the street. Dad followed us. I let my eyes rove along the storefronts across the street. An apartment building, a pawn shop, a coffee shop. Then I found what I was looking for. Anthony's Antiques and Stuff. My heart leaped. The store still existed. I kept my eyes glued to that sign. "Please take me there, Mom," I silently prayed. What did Dune tell you about prayer? "Please, please, please." Mom steered me down the street, past the apartment building, past the pawn shop, past the coffee shop. We stopped in front of Anthony's. Dad stood in the front window, hands in his pocket, gazing through the glass. Mom and I pulled up beside him. I couldn't believe it. Finally, after all this time, some good luck. I stared through the window, searching for the clock. The window display was set up like an old-fashioned living room. My eyes roamed over the furniture. A wooden bookcase, a fringed table lamp, a Persian rug, an overstuffed armchair, and a clock. A table clock. Not the cuckoo clock. Not the right clock. My heart sank back to its normal low spot in my chest. "It figures," I thought. "Here I am, at the antique store at last, and the fucking clock isn't here." This is chapter 21. I felt like crying. I could have cried, too, easily. After all, I was a baby. People expected me to cry, but I didn't. Even though I looked like a baby, I was 12 goddamn years old inside. I still had my fucking pride. Dad stepped to the door and held it open for Mom and me. Mom pushed me inside. I sat strapped into the stroller. The shop was jammed with old furniture. A chubby man in his 40s strolled down the aisle toward us. Behind him, down at the end of the aisle, in a corner at the back of the shop, I saw it. The clock. The clock. A squeal of excitement popped out of me. I began to rock in my stroller. I was so close.
"May I help you?"
the man asked my mom and dad. "We're looking for a dining room table," Mom told him. I had to get out of the stroller. I had to get to that fucking clock. I rocked harder. Not as hard as Dune, but I still rocked hard. But it was no good. I was strapped in. "Let me out of this thing," I shouted. Mom and Dad turned to look at me. "What is he saying?" Dad asked. It sounded like llama llama, the shopkeeper suggested. I rocked harder than ever. "He hates his stroller," Mom explained. She leaned down and unbuckled straps. "I'll hold him for a few minutes, then I'll quiet down." I waited until she held me in her arms. Then I screamed again and wiggled as hard as I could. Dad's face reddened. "Michael, what is wrong with you?" Down? Down! I yelled. All right, Mom muttered, setting me down on the floor. Now please stop screaming. I quieted down immediately. I tested my wobbly, chubby little legs. They wouldn't get me far, but they were all I had to work with. Keep an eye on him, the shopkeeper warned. A lot of this stuff is breakable. Mom grabbed my hand. Come on, Mikey, let's go look at some tables. While she tried to lead me to the corner of the shop, there were several wooden tables stood. I whined and squirmed, hoping to get away. Her grip was too tight. Mikey, shh, she said. I let her drag me to the tables. I glanced up at the cuckoo clock. It was almost noon. At noon, I knew, the cuckoo would pop out. It was my only chance to grab the bird and turn it around. I tugged on Mom's hand. She tightened her grip. What do you think of this one, honey? Dad asked her, rubbing his hands along the dark wood table. I think that wood's too dark for our chairs, Herman, Mom said. Another table caught her eye. As she moved toward it, I tried to slip my hand out of hers. No go. I toddled after her to the second table. I shot another glance at the clock. The minute hand moved. 12:02. We can't be too picky, honey, Dad said. The burgers are coming over Saturday night, 2 days from now, for a dinner party. We can't have a dinner party without a dining room table. I know, bitch. But there's no point in buying a table that we don't like. Dad's voice began to rise. Mom's mouth got that hard, set look to it. Aha! A fight! This was my chance. Dad was shouting, why don't we just spread a blanket out on the floor and make them eat there? We'll call it a picnic. Mom finally relaxed her grip on my hand. I slipped away and toddled as fast as I could towards the clock. The clock's minute hand moved again. I toddled faster. I heard my parents shouting at each other. I won't buy an ugly table, and that's that, Mom cried. Please don't let them notice me, I prayed. Please, not yet. I reached the cuckoo clock as fast as I could. I stood in front of it and stared up at the clock. The cuckoo's window was far above me, out of reach. The minute hand clicked again. The clock's gong sounded. The cuckoo's window slid open. The cuckoo popped out. It cuckooed once. It cuckooed twice. I stared up at it helpless, a 12-year-old boy trapped in a baby's body. I stared grimly at the clock. Somehow, I had to reach the cuckoo. Somehow, I had to turn it around. Chapter 22. Cuckoo. Cuckoo. 3, 4. I knew that once it reached 12, I was doomed. The cuckoo bird would disappear, and so would my last chance to save myself. In a day or so, I would disappear. Disappear forever. Frantic, I glanced around for a ladder, a stool, anything. The closest thing was a chair. I toddled over to the chair and pushed it towards the clock. It moved about an inch. I leaned, putting all my weight into it. I figured I weighed about 20 pounds, but it was enough. The chair began to slide across the floor. Cuckoo. Cuckoo. 5, 6. I shoved the chair against the clock. The seat of the chair came to my chin. I tried to pull myself up onto the seat. My arms were too weak. I planted a baby sneaker against the chair leg. I boosted myself up. I grabbed a spindle at the back of the chair and heaved my body onto the seat. I made it. Cuckoo. Cuckoo. 7, 8. I got to my knees. I got to my feet. I reached up to grab the cuckoo. I stretched as tall as I could. Cuckoo. Cuckoo. 9, 10. Reaching. Then I heard the shopkeeper shout, somebody grab that baby. Chapter 23. I heard pounding footsteps. They were running to get me. I strained to reach the cuckoo. Just another inch. 11. Mom grabbed me. She lifted me up. For 1 second, the cuckoo flashed within my reach. I grasped it and turned the head around. Cuckoo. 12. The cuckoo slid back into the clock, facing the right way. Forward. I wriggled out of my mom's arms, landing on the chair. Mikey, what has gotten into you?
A 12-year-old, clearly, obviously, she cried. She tried to grab me again. I dodged her. I reached around to the side of the clock. I saw the little dial that told the year. I felt the button that controlled it. I could reach it just standing on the chair. I slammed my hand on the button, carefully watching the years whiz by. I heard the shopkeeper yelling, "Get the baby away from my clock!" Mom grabbed me again, but I screamed. I screamed so loudly it startled her. She let her hands go. "Mikey, let go of that," Dad ordered. I took my hand off the button. The dial showed the right year, the present year, the year I turned 12. Mom made another grab for me. This time, I let her pick me up. "It doesn't matter what happens now," I thought. "Either that clock will work, or I'll go back to being 12 again. Or else it won't work, and then what? Then I'll disappear, vanish in time forever." I waited. "I'm so sorry," Dad said to the shopkeeper. I hope the baby didn't damage the clock. The muscles in my neck tensed. Nothing was happening. Nothing. I waited another minute. The shop inspected the clock. "Everything seems okay," he told Dad. "But he changed the year. I've got to change it back." "No," I wailed. "No, don't." That boy could use a little discipline, if you ask me, the shopkeeper said. He reached his hand around the side of the clock and set back the year.
Chapter 24.
"No!" I wailed. "No!" That's it. I realized I'm doomed. I'm a goner. But the shopkeeper never touched the button. A bright white light flashed. I felt dizzy, stunned, and I blinked again. Several seconds passed before I could see anything. I felt cool, damp air. I smelled a musty odor. It either smells like the garage or Pirates of the Caribbean. "Michael, do you like it?" Dad's voice. I blinked. My eyes adjusted. I saw Dad and Mom looking older, looking normal. We were standing in the garage. Dad was holding a shiny new 21-speed bike. Mom frowned. "Michael, are you feeling all right?" "They were giving me the bike. It was my birthday." The clock worked. I brought myself back to the present. Almost to the present. Up to my 12th birthday. Close enough. I felt so happy I thought I'd explode. I threw myself at Mom and hugged her hard. Then I hugged Dad. "Wow," Dad gushed. "I guess you really do like the bike." I grinned. "I love it," I exclaimed. "I love everything. I love the whole fucking world." That's actually how I feel about life right now. Mainly, I loved being 12 again. I could walk, I could talk, I could ride the bus by myself. "Whoa, wait a minute," I thought. "It's my birthday. Don't tell me I have to live through that again." I tensed my shoulders and steeled myself for a horrible day to come. "It's worth it," I told myself. "It's worth it if it means time will go forward the way it's supposed to." I knew too well what would happen next. Tara. She'd try to get on my bike. The bike would fall over and get scratched. "Okay, Tara," I thought. "I'm ready. Come and do your worst." I waited. Tara didn't come. In fact, she didn't seem to be around at all. She wasn't in the garage. No sign of her. Mom and Dad oohed and ahed over the bike. They didn't act as if anything was wrong or as anything was missing. "Where's Tara?" I asked them. They looked up. "Who?" They stared at me. "Did you invite her to the party?" Mom asked. "I don't remember sending an invitation to a Tara." Dad grinned at me. "Tara, is that some girl you have a crush on, Michael?" "No," I answered, turning red. It was as if they'd never heard of Tara, never heard of their own daughter. "You'd better go upstairs and get ready for your party, Michael," Mom suggested. "The kids will be here soon." "Okay." I stumbled into the house, dazed. "Tara!" I called. Silence. Could she be hiding somewhere in the house? I searched through the house. Then I checked her room. I threw the door open. I expect to see a messy, all-pink girl's room with a white canopy bed. Instead, I saw two twin beds, neatly made with plaid covers. A chair, an empty closet. No personal stuff. Not Tara's room. A guest room? Wow, I was amazed. No Tara. Tara doesn't exist. How did that happen? I wandered into the den, looking for the cuckoo clock. It wasn't there. For a second, I felt a shock of fear. Then, I calmed down. Oh yeah, I remembered. We don't have the clock yet. Not on my birthday. Dad bought it a couple days later. But I still didn't understand. What happened to my little sister? Where was Tara? My friends arrived for the party. We played CDs and ate tortilla chips. Hey, 2012 kids, they played CDs. That was a party back then. Cece pulled me into a corner and whispered that Mona
had a crush on me. Wow! I glanced at Mona. She turned a little pink and glanced away, shyly. Tara wasn't there to embarrass me. It made a big difference. My friends all brought presents. I actually opened them myself. No Tara to open my presents before I get to them. At cake time, I carried the cake into the dining room and set it in the middle of the table. No problem. I didn't fall and make a fool of myself, because Tara wasn't there to trip me. It was the greatest birthday party I'd ever had. It was probably the greatest day I'd ever lived, because Tara wasn't there to ruin it. I could get used to this, I thought. A few days later, the cuckoo clock was delivered to our house. Isn't it great? Dad gushed, as he had the first time. Anthony sold me the clock cheap. He said he discovered a tiny flaw in it. The flaw? I'd almost forgotten about it. We still didn't know what it was, but I couldn't help wondering if it had something to do with Tara's disappearance. Maybe the clock didn't work perfectly in some way. Maybe it somehow left Tara behind. I hardly dared to touch the clock. I didn't want to set off any weird time trips. But I had to know what had happened. I carefully studied the face of the clock again, and all the decorations. Then I stared at the dial that showed the year. It was set at the current year. Without thinking about it, I scanned 12 places down the dial to find the year I was born. There it was. Then my eyes back to the dial. 1992, 1993, 1994, 1995, 1997. Wait a second, did it just skip a year? I checked the dates again. 1996 was missing. There was no 1996 on the dial. And 1996 was the year Tara was born. Dad, I found the flaw. Look, there's a missing year on the dial. Dad patted me on the back. Good job, son. Wow, isn't that funny? To him, it was just a funny mistake. He had no idea his daughter had never been born. I suppose there's some way to get back in time and get her. I guess I probably ought to do that. And I will. Really? One of these days. Maybe. The end. Wait. Did he just use some sort of temporal flux to kill his sister? Oh my god, this is like a prequel to Time Cop. Time Cop! Anyway, I'm Dune. I really hope the audio of this sounds mediocre, at least. I can see the levels are really low. I don't know what's going to go on with it. But thank you, Geo, for leaving the mic here. This is where I usually make false promises that I'll get way more up way more often, and that's not true. You know it's not true. But I'll keep them coming, because fuck it. You know, what else am I gonna do? I'm happy in life. Like, for the first time maybe ever. So, you know, can't complain. I'm Dune, this is Dune Reads Goosebumps, and always say it with me, everyone.
Say it with me.
Stay spooky, bitches.